Hey, DC fans, it's Gary from Burton's Comics. I just want to let you know that Burton's Comics is open and ready to serve you in Hamilton, Ontario, down 725 Barton Street East. Come in for some deals on the weekend. Thanks.
All right, you done coughing? Yeah? Sean, are you good? Because we are already rolling on our last live episode until Thanksgiving weekend.
I seen the timer going. I'm like, you're an ass.
So that thing I was doing with my balls, so you were watching that whole time. That's like a private oiling moment, man. And now everybody knows.
The hub under your breath. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. God dang it. It's my ritual. I enjoy making funny noises. Everyone enjoys making funny noises. Laugh at me if you will, because it's hilarious.
Well, on that note, welcome to this week's episode. We'll be talking about Deathstroke, Knights and Dragons today. First off, Mize, how you doing this week, man?
Oh, well, a little better than, you know, going about the week. I fell a bit, you know, under the weather. I didn't suffer any immediately threatening conditions, of course, which was a huge benefit there. So I'm happy to just have gotten through that the best I can. So really, the day was super ass busy for me. And, you know, just the following days to come are going to be even more of an adventure, really, being able to catch up on this kind of stuff. So I'm not in a spot of boredom for the next period of time, I'll say.
Perfect. Little one, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. I got the cutest of puppies to snuggle all week because we're at the mother-in-law's. If you hear little snores, that's just the dog. Don't worry about it. Say hi, Rosie. Yeah, she's trying to get Jay to get the camera out of her face, or the
phone out of her face. I'm sure anyone that's followed either of our social medias have seen pictures of Rosie get posted. So let's jump into it this week. Today, 28 years ago, was the debut of Harley Quinn.
That's huge stuff. A huge part of Batman the Animated Series, and at that time, we didn't know she would make such a huge impact to come in the future. But from comics to various other portrayals, any other outlets, so far have been great and creative. Of course, you know, everybody has their favorites. Everybody has those ones that they hate absolutely. But whatever the case is, Harley Quinn has still been the talk of the town in DC Comics for God knows how long, quite steadily at that. So huge happy birthday again to her. Huge congratulations to Paul Dini, I believe is the one that created her.
That's right.
Fantastic. Well, just a great ordeal of appreciation on that front.
And from birthdays to holidays, also in the news this week, they've announced that Wonder Woman 84 will be released on Christmas Day.
That's pretty fly. I'm pretty good with that.
Yeah, I don't mind movies being released on Christmas Day. We've gone to movies on Christmas Day in the past.
Yeah.
Have you went to any of like the Star Wars ones when they came out on Christmas?
It was one of the Star Wars ones that we went to on Christmas. Okay.
That's like the only one I seem to remember when it comes out on Christmas that was there at that time.
Yeah, the family was doing their dinner like before or after, and we're like, cool, well, that gives us a chance to go see Star Wars.
Hey, if you got the Force, use the Force, right?
Exactly.
There you have it.
And also in news this week...
Titans,
actually. Oh, yes, Titans, the TV show, will resume production on October the 13th.
That's fantastic news. I'm sure we're going to be able to see more about that as well as many other variations of news, what's to come, like the coming scenes and everything like that, and alternative creations and discussions, and of course, fan inclusion, like the various cosplays they've been showing that. So all of that's going to begin tomorrow, the part two of the great fandom event that DC has been hosting. I cannot wait to see what they throw at us at that time.
Yeah, by the time this releases... fandom will be going on at the same time, so you'll either be listening to this right when it drops if you're one of those first minute listeners, which I love you first minute listeners, but there's, you know, could be in the past as well with our whole timey-wimey this gets released, but Phantom's going on. So depending on when you're listening to it, Phantom has either already happened or it is happening as we speak.
Yeah, you could already be watching it. You could have it on mute while, you know, we listen to us talk, or the other way around, whatever the case is. At any rate, it's something that you should all tune into. You know, you'll know just about as much as us. And in case you don't happen to follow it, chances are the following week we're going to have a whole bunch to talk about that event.
Yes, Shauna, I will have a beer. Thank you. Mize, do you want one?
I'm totally fine. Thank you, though.
I love how we're just asking you on the air as it's going.
Don't know. What's somebody going to do? Mom, the adults are asking if they want a beer.
Next thing you know, they'll be complaining that we've got bongs and joints on the table.
Well, fucking shit, that stupid ass horse. That.
They've already heard me choking and coughing for months.
Yeah, in the background.
That is true.
All right, which brings us over to Collector's Corner. Pretty much by the time Sean and I get home from our trip to Hamilton, the Black Adam and Murder Machine Funkos should be just about there.
Well, that's a huge thing because I was looking online earlier on and somebody had a Murder Machine up there. They were selling theirs for $70.
Damn!
Yeah, so if you're into collecting the lines of the Dark Knights, then definitely have a look at each individual figure there, because if figures are going for that price, then one of two things is going on there. This person is offering you a good deal on convenience, you know, based on the product that's currently in demand, of course, or at least in the category of demand that you're after. Or two, you're just absolutely insane.
Well, Mize, you were right beside me when I ordered it. I paid about $30.
That's actually really good, too. And at that time, I wish I had actually ordered it in there, in which case, if the $70 is like a bigger price than what it normally goes for, then I'll totally take it up on its retail then. Totally take the advantage, because this could be used as a sign that, you know, it could in fact go up and it could be a lot less convenient to find in the future.
Now, for the Dark Knights Funko set, we've got most of the Core 7 released. The only one that they don't have is the Drowned. Besides her, is there anyone else that stands out as someone that you think should get a Funko? Right away to me, yeah. The Martian Mindhunter comes to me.
Which one is that?
He's a newer one that was just introduced in one of the newer books. Okay. It's literally what you think it is. It's Bruce Wayne injecting himself with Martian DNA.
Now, this exact thing has in fact happened over the last saga before the Death Metal arc started there. It was the Justice League, Justice Doom War, and that that's exactly what they did. They managed to lure out the Martian Manhunter. Lex Luthor ended up taking his essence and injecting it into himself, and he became the Apex Predator. He was an underling, pretty much the number one henchman to Perpetua, who is looking to just erase the multiverse as everyone, including ourselves, knows it.
Now, imagine the Dark Knight's version of that.
Oh, the Dark Knight's version? During, the Infected storyline, that's one of the more prominent parties that Perpetua was concerned with. So they had a huge arc, and that means of storytelling is what led to how the Batman who last, or as we know him now, the Darkest Knight, it, from A to B, is what's going on.
Right, I'm just saying, now we've got the Darkest Knight version of Apex Predator in the Martian Mindhunter.
Yeah, that is a good point. I love my apple juice.
Have you seen any Dark Knights in any of the books that you want to see? Maybe Azrael's?
No, not really.
Saint Batman?
Yeah, the Saint Batman one, but that's probably about it.
I believe as the 6-inch or even the 12-inch. I'll go with the 12-inch on this one. It would have to be the B-Rex.
A 12-inch B-Rex?
A 12-inch B-Rex. It was a Batman who tried getting out of a destroyed cave, and when he no longer could, he was down there so long he had lost his mind. He had put his brain in a giant dinosaur, and when he went to it, he broke out. And after that, the bat brain and the dino instincts went over Arkham Asylum and ate every villain in there.
See, if we're doing that, then you have to put out one of the Funko Rides.
Oh.
For the bat...
for the Batmobile.
Didn't they already do that with the 60s one?
Oh, I've got a 60s one, but I'm saying you do it with the Batmobile that's got Batman's brain in it.
Okay. Oh my god. Jesus, I hate that so
much. But you do those, and you just do a repaint of the Terry McGinnis Batman Beyond. Do a repaint of that and put out the Beyonder.
That'd be pretty fly. I wouldn't mind seeing that. That sounds pretty cool. yeah, that pretty much sums it up there. I mean, like, there is quite a few different... Oh, no, wait. Technically, the Robin King. The Robin King is not, like... He's not a Dick Grayson. He's not a Tim Drake or anything like that. He's Bruce Wayne as a child. A murderous, misbegotten, spoiled brat of a child. And he's given the opportunity to play with dangerous shit and given God knows what inhumane abilities by the Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah, he would make a good Funko to add to the lineup.
You should make that Pearl one that you were telling me about with Martha.
Yes, we'll talk about that one next week because that issue just came out on Wednesday.
Oh, did it?
So we won't talk too many spoilers right now. But that wraps up for Collector's Corner. We haven't really picked up our weekly books yet. We're doing that tomorrow before Fandom kicks off. Mize, have you picked up anything for what you're reading this week?
I'm still catching up on some of the Empire titles that I've been missing out on rather than going and finding the new ones. Because as it would seem, the more I try to find the ones that are currently out as opposed to keep up with the new ones, they'll be easier to get a hold of as I go. Because it's a fairly large story arc and it just keeps on, the list just keeps getting bigger. Aside from that, though, Batman Joker War is going great as expected, and I'm only so shy away from when my trades start picking back up and flowing me some good story. I mean, maybe I'd like to go pick up the individual issues of those, but if you're in Canada, do you know how goddamn much it is for a single issue? Jesus Christ, just take a damn finger. Not my finger, maybe Lewis's across the street. But as long as it pays for the comic, I'm fine with it. But when I have to use, you know, regular money and shit, my god. It is quite the expense. Still, though, the illustrations, the storytelling, it's never not going to be worth it, despite how much I complain.
And, of course, if you are ever looking to get them good deals on your single issues or trade paperbacks, always go check out Burden's Comics over at 775 Barton Street. You know he's got them weekend deals, those Crazy Gary deals every weekend. He's got the contests.
I think it's 725 Barton.
725.
Yeah, 725 Barton Street East. That I remember. I was just looking on the magnet earlier on in the, on my fridge.
It's across the street from the two churches.
Yeah, Barton and Barnsdale. Easy to spot.
So if you're looking to get your deals, you pop in there. You tell them that the Creature Features DC Animated Review Podcast did send you, and I know you're hearing those ads. So speaking of ads, if we've got nothing else in news, what do you say we cut to commercial now, and then we can jump right into the goddamn review?
I'm all right with that.
Nudes.
Do you like horror?
Sci-fi?
Superheroes?
Comics and adventure?
SunsetCrypt.com has you covered.
With reviews and articles.
Two associated podcasts. Hot damn!
Topics on a ton of bullshit and all geekery grounds with Crypt Keepers Curtis Sturrock, Steve Brown,
and Jeff Smith.
SunsetCrypt.com. Only the reader knows what awaits them.
Oh, and we are back now for our review of Deathstroke, Knights and Drag. Every time I go to say this title of this movie, I almost say Demons and Dragons.
It makes a lot more sense, you know, because Deathstroke, you hear the name, it doesn't really sound very heroic-ish, which normally what you come to expect out of, like, DC Universe films, primarily focused on the heroes. Hell, even Suicide Squad is their bits. But Deathstroke, however, you're looking at the guy who has maimed, slaughtered, and assassinated just for sheer money, and this is his tale, more or less, his point of origin, I guess, before he gets all criminal empirely.
Well, he seems to have his reputation already at this point. Do we know if this is an Elseworld story? Is this supposed to be canon in anything?
I believe it's just a new project. As far as character references go, there are quite a few of them, which are pretty cool. They all have to do with his criminal empire visage. So, it's a great story to have been told at any rate, and it makes me interested to go over the New 52 Deathstroke origins, just to see if there are any obscure names that have been introduced there. I don't really pay attention to that story arc for Deathstroke specifically all that much, but I'm always down to learn new stuff about him.
Yeah, I found in this story there wasn't many tie-ins to a greater universe. No mentions of Superman, no Batman.
None of that. It's just the Seven, the military experiments, and it's all Slate all the time. And he is voiced by a man far too short to have such a manly voice, Michael Chiklis.
He is played by the Thing of the Fox Fantastic Four movies. I know Shauna had something to say on that. I'm sure it was well eloquent and thought out for us.
It was, and now I can't find it.
She puts her notes down in shorthand like I do. But then she forgets why that shorthand is what it is.
I'm sure she'll remember her factoid about Michael Chiklis shortly after.
But we will shield her from that.
Outstanding.
And we will get on with the review. That one was so bad it was good, and you know it. The fact that I remember that there was a Fox show called The Shield that he was on.
True enough, I'll give you half a point.
That show was just as bad as Fantastic Four.
The best.
So let's start the review. We open up, and, Slade is washed up on a beach.
I turned off the television.
He's not wearing shoes.
Yeah, it's a nice full moon, at least. Everything's looking all nice and peaceful. It's not every day you can catch a full moon like that with a nice, soft, sandy beach, great outlook of the ocean, and a bloody, battered, broken body just, laying about, bleeding out.
And we do see that broken body, sand has got an itch. Sand is getting in places where you don't want it, as it always goes when you go to the beach. And we see a broken and shattered Deathstroke mask washed up alongside him.
I wonder how that happened.
Flash! Not the character. However, we cut back, as we now learn that, we're cutting back to earlier days. And, Slade's just on the phone with his wife, Addie.
Yeah, he's talking about a business deal for San Miguel. Excuse me. Just overall business work and everything like that. Just assuring his wife everything's all good. And Addie, of course, is with Jericho. He seems pretty excited he's going to get to talk to his dad on the phone. But, it's before bedtime, so he's really running the rails on this one, and he's super stoked. And finally manages to get back on the phone, get the phone on with his dad there, and he wants him to read a story from halfway across the world. And it was really cool to see that Slade Wilson, this maniacal, twisted, well-paid mercenary, carries a children's book for the sake of his son and his luggage and shit, so he can read it for him when he goes to bed. Pardon me.
Okay, now on this,
a line. That's it.
Yeah, reads him like a page. First of all, second of all, how old is Joe here? Would we say how old is little Joey?
I'm gonna say 8.
That is an excellent question there. I'm saying 10 or 12.
Okay, so your answer makes it even worse.
Why is he calling his mom?
Yeah, he's still calling his parents mama and papa at that age.
Right.
And he still needs his daddy to read him a bedtime story? of that little reading grade, and you're saying he's 11 or 12 at that age?
No, like between 10 and 12. It could be any of those, and in which case, it all varies on how they brought him up, how they spend their time with him. So if that's the case, if he's like 10 years old, why the fuck doesn't he have a GameCube or something? Or for whatever year, whatever the Nintendo or Xbox thing is going on there.
Our niece is 10, and she reads us her bedtime story. We don't read
They're
it to
chapter
her.
Chapter books.
And she reads chapter books, 2-3 chapters to us every time she goes to bed.
Yeah, but this is a top-tier picture book with very short dial.
He can still read it. Come on. Read it to me, child.
But of course, as soon as he's done the story, it is time for Deathstroke to suit up.
Oh, yeah. He's got his armor all Batman tucked away and everything like that. So that's a nice little shout out. You know, seeing the same costume change, but with a different name.
And he goes to work quick and hard, just how she likes it. As he begins to infiltrate an army base.
Not just like any kind of army base. This legit looks like a fortress going on here. And Slade is just cutting his way through. Like, this is a hot knife and butter and multiple chops, you know. Kind of like a dicing sensation, but with bad guys instead of, you know, whatever you're chopping up as vegetables or meat.
And at the same time, we see that a home invasion has begun. And Slade's wife is no slouch when it comes to throwing fisticuffs.
No, he whips his ass. Like, there's no shortage of amazement to Slade Wilson's hand-to-hand combat, weapon combat, even firearm combat. He is just an amazing character.
I was talking about Addy kicking the home invader's ass.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, pardon me. Addy is also a fantastic character. I'm thinking Deathstroke specifically because I don't see Addy fight too often in this film, and of course, playing her role and everything like that. I totally got a name mix up there. Home invader is not to be trifled with, as you can clearly see. This home invasion happening, nobody knows why it's going on. And the overall target in there turns out to, well, not be the two people fighting, but the boy upstairs and Joseph.
And this is also where we get our first Team 7 reference.
That is absolutely right, yeah, because they're talking on the phone about, you know, just themselves, their family and everything like that, what happened in Cambodia, and just going on about overall team detail.
From there, Slade gets to the end of what his job is, his hit, and brings in the head of his employer.
Decapitation!
There's a president's head of where he was at. He brought him that head there because, he was doing some pretty vile shit. And he was there for the general, actually, and he was doing even more vile shit. So, instead of the general dying, Destro killed whichever one made him mad, like, more mad, and then decided whoever lived would pay him. And of course, the general tried being a smartass about it, and Slade just, you know, he had to warn him. Like, he had to give him a warning that hilariously made him say that he'll pay the money.
And from there, we get our first introduction to a great character, just from, you know, Deathstroke, a great deep cut for, in general, with Wintergreen.
Yes, Wintergreen.
Wintergreen is absolutely badass. I actually enjoyed him in Titans.
And the fact that they use him in such a great microchip Alfred style role for this.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Oh, definitely. But he's more combat involved too, which is just absolutely astonishing. Like, it's great to see Alfred get involved physically in some of the Bat Family fights. But when you have a character who's just going to be on that constant availability, it just gives you more interest into who Wintergreen is. So any new viewers into this, just the overall lore of Deathstroke, go ahead and look up, Team 7. Go ahead and look up Wintergreen. Like, it's a lot more of an interesting story than you'd be led on to believe.
And speaking of an interesting story, this is when we start getting the flashbacks of the serum and what can only be compared to as the super soldier testing of one Slade Wilson. We get a nice young relationship moment between Addie and Slade.
They're talking about starting a new life, you know. Slade's term is up. He's going home, but Addie's trying to dodge around the fact that she has a little over a year left still. So despite her, you know, rebelling against Slade's disapproval of her wanting to not do that and just be with him, well, it just shows the kind of patriot that Slade Wilson was before all this went down. So, of course, they did their thing. Slade went home after being discharged. They thought the experiment was a fail just because of the reaction. They didn't see no immediate boom boom or amazement or anything like that. They just, yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, he's a dud because we didn't make him do anything specific or try and do something. So from there, we get another part of his flashbacks in Cambodia. He's showing a little dirty boy side there. He didn't know what to make of himself, so his better judgment took the better of him as he lay down with a resident in Cambodia, going behind the back of Adeline.
Well, it's also during the flashbacks that we see the serum start kicking in and doing what we know it does. However, it starts by looking something quite familiar to comics fans of another publisher. For those of you who don't get the reference, I'm sure Mize will jump into us off track here. As for a brief second, Slade Wilson fucking Deadpools.
Oh, yeah. He totally went down that route there. Like, any vein, any tendon and everything like that just all of a sudden became visible. But as they animated it, though, just to keep it simplified, just that image, though, was really, like, it actually still looked agonizing. And then seeing it settle down, seeing it properly bond with how Slade's body operates was a pretty cool sight to see, you know, and that must have been absolutely atrocious on his system. I mean, all the same with, like, Wolverine as well, having the adamantium bonded to his system, he probably got that same kind of look as well, and that relevance as to, at the very least, the feeling of the pain, I can't really say for what the level difference was.
Now, do we want to touch on the humor of that? The Wade being Slade's parody. So now Slade is parodying Wade Wilson with this scene.
That was a pretty nice touch to it. You know, they didn't try and go over the top because that's not the kind of character Deathstroke is, unless he's killing people. But if it's in a manner of mocking another character, then of course they'll just use it in a small dialogue and he'll kill him.
Anything?
Nope.
Perfect. This is when Slade does finally, let me just check here. Oh,
he gets home and
no, there was some, okay. There was a note here that I put in during the war scene. Now you're an art aficionado. You study up on all the comic book history of the artwork and things like that.
I do my best.
Did you notice the little nod in all the dust clouds and spotlights in the artwork? They were all dotted with little Jack Kirby-style artwork.
I did, in fact, notice that variation in animation there. You know, it's nice to see them just so fluently appear within a moving, like, stencil of whatever action is taking place. Or if they happen to be maneuvering around with the kind of energy flow, flame, whatever they got going on there, and you could see them in there, I'm like, this feels like very 60s classic, and it's a nice just little touchstone on that, just the fact that the Deathstroke was around for that long. And it was absolutely amazing seeing that. I thought it would be annoying after a while, but I just kept getting a pleasant sensation from the image.
Yeah, it's not something that you'd notice other movies or animated properties making use of, but it shows you a great use of space by doing that. And a contrast in the light.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a nice retrospective, and they still managed to make a beautiful movie with it.
And this, however, is where he finds his bartender, and they smush.
Oh, baby. They make the boom boom. They do the nasty.
And that, sir, is when Slade Wilson does return home.
And, of course, any father's been gone for that long would return home to a pleasant surprise or just, you know, a quiet home. But unfortunately, the kind of surprise he comes home to is a ruin. As you can clearly see, his house has been burglarized and ransacked. Well, that's what one would think. In his case, though, he rushes upstairs to ensure the safety of his wife and son, but the only thing he finds is the bruised wife, and his son, Joseph, has been taken.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah, Addie's in full Tasmanian mom effect at this point. The secrets and lies, like, whoever had broken in there, he had explained that Deathstroke, Slade Wilson, he's not who the family had thought he was over the course of the last God knows how many years. And this didn't sit well whatsoever with Adeline, especially when they would promise themselves the kind of relationship of no more secrets or lies like this. This man's name is the Jackal, and he is a member of Hive. And he is somebody that they both want to rip apart at this point in time, especially causing this kind of turmoil for their family.
Yeah, and we do get a flash to Jackal and Hive confronting Slade. Slade manages to hunt them down into a little warehouse, where we also get the introductions of Jade and Bronze Tiger.
Absolutely. Pretty good character inclusions. I feel really bad for Bronze Tiger, though, because, you know, of course, if you've seen Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, that's a Bronze Tiger. That is a Bronze Tiger anybody can get behind all day. This one here, I was very on. He's good. You probably like him. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever because, you know, he's still Bronze Tiger. He's still a cool character. But for me personally, just didn't speak to my expectation, was all.
Okay, now, I love Bronze Tiger as a character. I think he's great. I always get a pop out of seeing him. However, I'm finding since he was introduced on Arrow, DC has been leaning on this character as their stereotypical villain archetype thug very heavily in many properties.
That is absolutely true. But as of this point in time, though, we're seeing him represented in a pre-Suicide Squad time frame. He could have still been just post CIA young. He could have just been like going undercover, something like that, and going on from there. But, you know, they completely threw things up in the air and watched it land. And it's not like it was bad. It was just different.
Yeah, we do get confirmation that this is a different timeline as Slade fucking cuts off Bronze Tiger's arm and murks Jade.
Oh, yeah. Before the arm comes off, though, when you watch the movie, of course, you may already have, you'll notice that this sword goes through his fist all the way through to the end of his arm, and then he slices through it.
Don't move.
And off it comes. Like, you have so much agony before the arm comes off. Like I said, when it comes to killing people, Deathstroke knows how to do over the top.
Yeah, this was the first real moment that, like, the killing of all the nameless soldiers was cool to see, but stabbing through the fist with that serrated sword was the first time this movie really got me to go, oh, okay, so that's what we're going to be.
That's what leads me to believe that it's represented the New 52 Deathstroke, because in that universe, one of his weapons was a fairly large serrated broadsword. It was giant, but it was so cool to see him swing around, especially when he was part of the Suicide Squad for a little while.
You got anything on, you want to say on Bronze Tiger or Jade?
No, all I had down was, there's no coming back from a sword through the chest.
For Jade, yeah.
No, absolutely. Poor Jade will not be with us for the remainder of the film, though I do remind you, no tigers were officially harmed in the making of this movie.
Just Bronze Tiger.
Well, this is where we get an infamous setup for a character as a, you know, Joe is held hostage within the glass box.
Do as I say or I'll murder your son.
Slade says, fuck that noise, and goes and takes the shot. Well, this ballsy maneuver
just triggered some fight or flight shit in the young teenage intern that decided, hi, if they look pretty cool, I'll co-op with them.
Yeah, and this intern slits Joe's throat.
Like, right open. I'm guessing he didn't mean to, because he would try to use his maneuverability, his will to live, to back off and just fucking book it. Not kill the son of the man who clearly has you dead to rights, regardless of what pane of glass you hide behind.
Like, is that how Jericho died in Titans? Or that is in Titans?
No.
As far as, like, losing his voice goes, something like that happened, I think.
Yeah, not with a hive agent, though.
No, it's not. It was just a relative scenario, rather than actually copying off of a different outlet. That's totally cool.
And this is where Slade then leaves a note for Jericho.
Oh, yeah.
After his wife kicks him out,
yeah. Yeah.
Although it was just barely, however, Destro did, you know, get his son out of there. He did get him the help he would need so he wouldn't die at the very least. But now Joseph Wilson has to live the rest of his life without being able to use his voice.
And, you know, his mom is trying, doing the best that she can. Before we cut to a good old 10 years later. But you know what? I'm going to say a 10 years later is a good spot for a commercial break.
Yeah,
totally fine there.
Perfect. We will see you after this ad from... Hell, let's go to the ad from Gluten's the Devil. Hey folks, do you like fun recipes and delicious food? Are you a health-conscious person or someone who may be celiac? Well, check out the Twitter account Gluten's the Devil for fun recipes and delicious food on almost a daily basis. That's Gluten's the Devil at Twitter. And we are back, and we are jumping 10 years ahead into the future. We're opening up on a poker game of some no good Knicks, and next thing you know that they were dealt a bad hand.
Definite bad hand. Like, it was definitely crap. Well, at least for most of the guys, you know, they had to fold. One guy took the whole lot of Canadian Tire money in, but everyone shared the same participation award, either a bullet or a blade. Well, more bullets than anything, really.
Yes, deuces were wild, as they say. I know nothing about cards.
There's numbers. There's numbers, and then there's a king.
There's letters.
And then there's some J dude, I think his name's Jesus. He's just disguising in the curtains, and that's why they put him on the card there.
And why is there a Joker card but no Batman card?
That's completely unfair. Hey, make a Batman card.
Well, after these guys were dealt their hand, Boru comes rushing in. A Russian, Scandinavian, mercenary woman.
You know, she reminds me of Bruno.
A little bit.
Right? Like, whether he's German or Russian, she's an absolute monster. And for a second there, I just got super excited. And I'm like, wow, that's obscure as fucking really cool. And it was still really cool either way, because she totally took a fight to Slade that you wouldn't expect. It was really cool.
But she go boom.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely boom.
When Slade stuffs a grenade in her mouth.
Oh, yeah, despite how great the fight was, you know. She had to chew on a grenade, and, well, there was a spicy kick to it. Slade, however, wasn't there for them. He's there for the liberation of something downstairs in the basement there, which happens to be a room full of trafficked women. They were running a human trafficking ring, a sex trafficking ring, whatever the case is. And authorities were called, the women were freed, and Slade made off like a superhero, which is kind of super unexpected, but really cool as fuck, you know?
It also gives us insight into Slade himself that we'll need as we continue going. As, you know, by doing acts like this, he views himself as the hero.
Yeah, doing the right thing, you know, doing that patriotic soldier stuff that he was given this gift for, especially since he can do it fresh on his own and not under the command of a military power.
Well, this is when he gets a phone call from the new Queen Bee of the Hive. And she has his son.
Well, yeah, like, all the phones start ringing, you know? And all Slade wanted to do was just chill, let his wounds heal, and that be that. And he's given a call by this snot-nosed teenager that, well, managed to get her hands on Joseph. Just out of the blue, very threatening, and of course, that would enrage any given parent, let alone Slade Wilson.
This, of course, forces Slade to meet with Addie about the situation. And we get the great line that'll come back later on where it's uttered, "The past is dead."
Ooh, that's very ominous. I'm sure we'll hear more about that like in a little while there.
This is when they meet up in the park.
Yeah, and they start talking about, you know, just the initial recent turn of events. And, well, the usual argument starts back up. You know? They argue about faults, wrongdoings. And then, of course, they argue about Addie's presence during the rescue mission. He believes that she's not ready or capable for this kind of thing because she's been doing the mother thing for so long that she hasn't had the right, you know, constant of the training and the exercise and everything like that. I think she'd be more of a liability as well at that point.
And they share themselves a little smoochy smooch.
Yeah, that was just, you know, you argue with the guy, you blame him for pretty much everything except the kitchen sink falling. And then you plant one, you plant a wet one on him. What a weird bitch.
Well, this is when Slade starts working his way up the chain. He's taking out drug dealers. He's taking out druggies. He makes his way all the way up. And a card dealer. A random card dealer that at first looked like Zatanna.
Kind of, yeah. It was really weird, you know? And she was just out of the blue, so obscure. And she attracted the women that would normally be attracted to the players, but, you know, she was there doing her thing. And, well, Slade immediately spotted her because it's kind of hard to miss somebody with the Hive's fucking logo on their jacket. I mean, if you want to put a logo on something, then let me tell you the right way to do it. There is a businessman out there who knows no bounds for his creative genius. He knows his way around the likes of the alien threat, and he, in fact, knows his way around the likes of super fashion. Powerful fashion, and that's just not the super expensive Armani or whatever culturally ingenious suit that he's wearing. It just so happens to be the brightening logo on his tie clip.
I know his name. I know his name.
Who's that?
Is it Kyle Smith?
You son of a bitch. No, but it is the man who has guaranteed us that he will take down the very threat that is Kyle Smith. The Kryptonian menace that has come to Earth and just started busting walls for no reason. We are going to get you, Kyle Smith. And I, of course, mean Lex Luthor, who owns the LexCorp tie clip. Beautiful.
Now, I tagged you in a picture of Kyle Smith. I challenge you, Shauna, and the listeners all out there, find me your Kyle Smith. Tag me in a picture of who you think Kyle Smith, the Superman, is best represented by. And, I don't know, the best one by Christmas, I'll get you a free fucking t-shirt.
I mean, extra points if he's wearing a Superman t-shirt, you know? That it just suits right into things. There's nothing like dressing for the occasion or dressing for the job you want to lose.
Hit us up on Twitter, at ClownyJ, at Mize1987, at SixSpaceHair. I'll announce the winner on our end-of-the-year episode.
Fantastic. Fantastic stuff.
But it's during this chain of murder where we get to meet Colonel Kapoor.
Yeah, he's just doing his own thing, you know, and he's walking in. He needs some information regarding this new leader of Hive, their whereabouts, and how he can get there, what he can do to help Deathstroke get there as well.
And this is when we find out that Addy has been watching Slade.
Yeah, she's been keeping a close eye. I mean, she's still got that spyman's touch, you know. She's stalker. Doing a very, yeah, she's doing a very good job at being the stalker in this situation. And she's getting just as much info out of the whole ordeal as Slade is, only she doesn't have to lift a finger.
Hey, Shauna, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Thanks. It's also here where Slade has hacked into the computer of Colonel Kapoor, uses it to make a phone call, and turns out that Kapoor lied to him, and he still does have some communication with Hive.
That leads to Slade's next venture, going into the depths of Ghaznia. He's got that transmission, he's been well informed, he's going straight into a war zone, where Bronze Tiger just so happens to be alive and well. Unfortunately, I can't say the same for his right arm.
No, he's got a big metal arm. Of course, they get into a fight scene from here. And spoiler alert, that metal arm has those claws built into it, which I thought was kind of dope.
Yeah. You know what that arm also has? The same ability to get cut right off again.
And that does happen. But we also find out here that the Jackal is still alive.
He's been hiding out about underground, letting the new class of Hive leadership run things until he's good and ready to make his presence known. And so they have a little bit of a round two stint after that, you know. After finding out about the Jackals, laying low and everything like that, Slade knows where he's got to go.
Yeah, with the help of Wintergreen, they blow up the base and take off. We have Addy, Slade, and Wintergreen flying into their next location, which before being blown up, Deathstroke says just sending them there alone is a death sentence. Slade, Slade's going to take the first leap of action by diving in the water, where just as luck would have it, a little team of Hive divers, or I've written down, hey, a team of Hivers. Just happened to be floating.
It's actually quite hilarious because somebody thought it would be a good idea to send three regular dudes underwater to go face off against a super soldier with probably the most perfect hand-to-hand combat style, the best weapons fighting capability there is. And it just so happens, you know, the fish make good audience. They're not just regular fish, sharks.
No. Who's to say that the three of them were even out there looking for Slade? They could have just been a Hive team that were out studying the aquatic life.
They could have just been university interns that are like, hey, maybe that guy knows what time it is. And then from there, they just know things are hostile and they make the first move against them.
Now, as you mentioned, they do get interrupted by the return of Shark Week.
Yeah, Shark Week. Poor kids. They got fucked.
Now, they should consider themselves lucky that none of these sharks were royalty, because as we all know from season one, King Shark is a shark.
King Shark is a shark, that is true.
But once we do get to the island, Slade is greeted by one Lady Shiva.
Slade, of course, immediately surrenders because he knows full well he cannot withstand the force of power between the shore of the island and the fortress itself. So, in order to get to the goal point, he may as well just take the easiest route there. No need to overextend yourself. No need to ruin everything. Just, he just wants to get there, but Shiva's having none of it. She wants to just cut his head off and be done with it. So, from there, she is immediately stopped, like right at the point of, almost at the point of no return, pardon me, by orders from the Hive Queen to bring Slade into the fortress.
And the Hive Queen does reveal her face here as well. She looks semi-familiar, but we will get into that as Slade does start his rescue operation right there from the inside for his son.
Oh, yeah, he is completely livid at this point. It's ruined his life. They have his son. They've almost killed him. So why in the fresh hell would you not want your kind of vengeance? But you got to be cool for the time being because your moment's going to come. So after coming face to face with the queen, getting in and everything like that, they happen to reveal that they're planning to use Jericho for the domination of the entire world, revealing that he has psychic abilities that nobody ever knew about. Being able to utilize him for the sake of the power of suggestion, control of physical vessels, like through other people, and even just as like a telekinetic force of some kind, still impactful, anything like that. So there's a numerous amount of things that Joseph can do with his mind.
Yeah, we see these all on display. He takes out a wave of guards. Him and his father get to a ledge. He shuts a giant metal door. They go to a call for Wintergreen. And that's when Joe's like, yo, he ain't coming. You only heard his voice because I wanted you to. Heel turn, motherfucker. I'm with the bad guys.
Mask comes off. It's Ashton Kutcher. Hey, I'm Ashton Kutcher. You've been punked. And things really fell apart for Slade after that.
Yeah, bullets galore start raining down upon him, causing Slade to just drop back into the water, and he's literally swimming with the sharks.
Nope, just a little pushing right off there. And he's all ready for death to come, and, you know, he's drowning, he's going, he's feeling that peace, but he fights it anyway. He goes through the various flashbacks, he remembers missions, he remembers himself, and he gets back up and out of the water, but not on his own, because by the time that Deathstroke had awakened, he had awakened upon a boat piloted by Adelaide.
Yeah, where it turns out that little smoochy smooch they shared back in the park, she used her tongue to implant a GPS device into him.
I thought that was a pretty clever thing. I'm surprised Slade wasn't curious about that action as well earlier on. But, you know, the curiosity from it springs from the beginning, you know? Like, why you gotta be flipping out and then acting so crazy, lady? Like, well, here's your answer. The chip should dissolve within like the next couple of days after she had implanted the kiss on him. So that pretty much takes care of that factor for him. We never see or hear of this chip again, as it were.
Also, turns out Wintergreen's been helping her as well,
which is a huge saving grace for the film. It's again more inclusion for Wintergreen, and it's assistance in making Addie look a lot stronger. You know, and she has that backup just as well as Deathstroke, only without the super soldier capabilities. So of course, there's that little firepower inclusion to go behind her, and well, she makes a damn fine soldier regardless. So
this is when we get the Hive Queen, known as Rose, checking in with the Jekyll.
Yeah, assuring him that Deathstroke's dead, his body fell in the water and everything, and that they can continue on with their plans.
This is also when we start getting Rose's backstory of growing up with her mother.
Absolutely.
And the realization that if it weren't for a single balloon, her mom would be alive.
Yeah, like, seriously. Great job, Rose. Like, you couldn't have just waited till you got home and played with a doll or something, or you had to chase the balloon. Please, don't watch for cars or anything. And, Rose was saved from oncoming traffic. Her mother, however, did not meet the same kind of luck.
Over a balloon.
Rose is the worst. Like, absolute worst. Who does that? Oh, I'm gonna go chase this balloon. I probably have 20 balloons at home, but I need that balloon.
Fuck's sakes, Rose. What's the matter with you?
You can tell this Rose doesn't have her ability to see slightly into the future.
This is one Rose who has one too many thorns. Yeah. So, from there we happen to see a little bit of a darker side into Rose's upbringing. Things do not bode well since she has nobody in Cambodia to take care of her. She is left to fend for herself on the street and tend to underground fight pits of all things.
Yeah, she joined Fight Club.
absolutely. And you thought that going in a Fight Club, this little girl would be absolutely slaughtered. But her daddy's genes kicked in. And
she killed it, dude.
Yeah. Now, I'm surprised they even told this part of the story. Mm. Because the first rule about Fight Club
is you don't talk about Fight Club.
I say that's B-movie.
And earlier, they had Fight Club in a ring of fire.
It's madness.
Wait. So you're saying the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about the B-movie?
No, first rule about B-movie is don't talk about B-movie.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. You don't want to incur the wrath of Jerry Seinfeld.
No, but one of my favorite things that you hear about trolls doing is copying, pasting the entire script for the B-movie in your replies. Like, for your reviews.
That's fantastic. I mean, it's already such a tedious movie as it stands, so having to either read through it just to see what it is that people were sending you, or just knowing that people are trolling you is just a pain in the ass.
A full-grown woman falls in love with a bee!
A full-grown woman does fall in love with a bee. Ladies and gentlemen.
That's the craziest thing I've seen.
Ladies and gentlemen, Hollywood's money.
I will back into the movie that we're talking about here.
Not B-movie.
Not B-movie. We will not be reviewing the B-movie.
Not at all. Don't even ask for it. God damn it. If you do, I will lift my cat's table. I will lift my cat's tail. I will scream in its asshole. Like, top of my lungs, scream into my cat's asshole.
You do know, as an April Fool's joke, we might have to review B-movie.
You know, I'm pretty comfortable with yelling into my cat's asshole.
That's April J.
My yeah, that's April Creature Feature Problems.
We're September Creature Feature Problems.
Right?
Well, this is when Jericho and Rose do a little mind melds.
Yeah, they have had quite the connection over the last little while. Let's see here. Yeah, they make sure everything's all good. They make sure they're all right. And well, it's remarkable as to how long and how quickly they've been able to bond with each other. But back to Slade, he's informed about his Cambodian affair partner being pregnant, and had he known that Addie believes he'd have fucked her on that too, then, you know, I mean, why would you still hide it regardless? I mean, like, why would she not find a way to give the guy a call? Like, try and find him and hunt him down. I mean, how do you spend that long with a woman and then ditch her just on the last little bit there? I mean, had to have had some kind of contact information for it. Why would he have completely just ditched out on her like that? Part of him had to have at least wanted to check in.
And this is where we go back to Jericho, and he's being trained by Rose, and the dude just pulls up the good guy move and refuses to kill. This is when he's mind-controlling those four guards.
Yeah, he's very considerate kid. He's still a young boy. He still has a conscience, regardless of what trauma he's been through, regardless of what he's learned. So he does spare their lives, but they move on to the next exercise after, you know, getting him down on his knees from there.
We're not making Jericho get down on his knees. No.
Come on.
That's a whole different movie.
Not at all. But the hench people that you see him doing the mind controls with everything these tests with. He commands one to get on the knees there. He commands the other to pull the gun out. Stop laughing. It's not funny.
Get down on your knees and show me you love me.
Well, to be fair, whipped out her gun. I mean, it's...
Well, not now, Shauna. Jeez, leave my pants alone.
So, after relieving the soldiers from that, so they don't have to, you know, get shot or shoot each other, they make two fight off against each other. And we notice that happens to be a breaking point for Jericho making the other two fight, and things start getting a lot more hectic in the cage. And we start to see a more brutal side of Jericho in the little testing area.
Yeah, he does get pushed too far. His eyes even go to shades of red as he just starts taking people out.
Yeah, that's messed up. Like, you can see, like, the hint of villainy in Jericho's eyes. Like, it kind of looks like how Brother Blood would seem when he's, like, you know, killing people or controlling others to kill people.
We cut back to our anti-heroes, I guess we could call them. And Addy has managed to hack Jericho footage from the Hive servers.
Yeah, that's actually pretty badass. Like, I'm not sure as to where they would have found it or if Slade had the time to pick something out so that way he could run it over to them, like, while he was there before he got completely murderized. And they happen to find out a devious plot about using Jericho's essence as power to control the minds of pretty much the world's leaders, being able to focus their attention on their riches, their policies, overall decision-making, and whatever force of brutality they deem necessary.
This is when Deathstroke and Addy start talking about, you know, Rose, and we really get the feeling here that Slade does view himself as a hero. Addy's like, you know, if you were a hero, you wouldn't be out there just slaughtering people, but he believes that he's justified in his actions.
Well, how else is anyone going to solve that problem? You know, if you can solve these problems by getting paid for them, then why the hell not? I mean, the man's probably made millions off these deals and managed to put corrupt powers down. As frowned upon as it may be, he is effective at his job.
And to me, that is always a key component to writing a great villain. A good villain can be anything, but a great villain believes that they are the hero to their own story.
Always, yeah, it's all about perspective. And regardless of the insanity or the righteousness of that angle, it's like he said, it's all how they view their brand of justice and why they don't believe to be evil.
Well, speaking of things that aren't evil, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll get a quick bowl into us, and we'll come back as things are about to get interesting.
Evil!
Do you want your ad here? Contact AdClownyJ or Mize1987 and DM them, letting them know you want to advertise on the DC Creature Features. And we are back, and we get a nice shot of San Francisco. This is really the first time that you can stop and appreciate the art style that they chose for this film.
Absolutely. The structures all around are fantastic. And the transit system, even the people kicking around. And most commonly, everyone's favorite tourist attraction, plane crashes. Of which, of course, happen quite commonly, or even for the first time ever, as a plane just dives directly into the Golden Gate Bridge and sparks a chain of news segments, of course, going around the world, as it isn't just beautiful San Fran that happens to be hit by this attack.
No, there are also there's a gunman attack in Times Square, a bombing in Congress, I believe it is.
Yeah, in Washington, D.C., where they hold all that kind of conference shit.
Or at least where they should.
Yeah, no doubt, right? They are just executing these really violent terrorist attacks while the president is taken to Air Force One and taken to the sky to stay away from all the immediate danger.
Although that does not do them much good, as the Hive drone planes do find themselves surrounding Air Force One.
Absolutely. They look to head off the plane and kidnap the President of the United States to initiate further detail into their plan, i.e. use Jericho to take over the President, to take over the world.
Solid plan, if they can pull it off.
First the stakes, then the planet. I mean, that's pretty much how you do it.
Stakes and weights, baby.
Stakes and weights.
This is where Jericho and Rose do decide, yo, we don't need you, Jackal, and they double turn on him.
Yeah, they want to execute the plan, and they want to reap the spoils instead of living in the command of this guy who is clearly more powerful than them, I suppose.
This is when we find out that Jekyll has been planning for their double turn and has had psionic dampeners implanted into his suit.
He's found ways to augment his battle armor so that way he doesn't fall prey to Jericho's psychic abilities, and he has a further oomph into his system so that way he's not going to be easily punctured and killed.
As well as a great vocabulary, as he flat out calls Rose a gutter snipe.
Like, that isn't a term you come across quite commonly.
I love it. I love it.
It's absolutely fantastic. In the game Magic the Gathering, there's actually a goblin creature that is just called Gutter Snipe. And when he called her that, it was just, boom, instant flash to that. Just a short, chub little goblin hanging around in dark British alleys.
Well, this is also where we get our first F-bomb in the film.
Oh, my God. Yeah, like, if they're going to drop F-bombs at some point in the movie, why do you start so late? Like, there has been killing, maiming, drama, intensity going on throughout the entire movie. Why are you now just dropping the first, like, F-bomb?
I'll save it for when it matters most.
The wild card it is.
This is also where we get Shiva versus Rose.
Oh, yeah, now this is going to be, like, just a nice fight overall to watch. The two are fantastically agile, they're fantastically trained for it, and they go at it pretty well.
In the air dogfight out there, Wintergreen's taking his shots, and Addie manages to shoot a rocket off of her shoulder, along with the help of Slade fighting ninjas on top of a ship.
Oh, that was badass. I really enjoyed that fight.
Yeah, the two of them flying down in their squirrel suits, magnetizing onto the plane.
Yeah, it's been, like, such a super cool, like, go at, and you see such a little hint of here in humanity in Addie as she's almost, like, slipping off the plane. She's almost ready to go, and she can feel that bittersweet just end happening, because if she doesn't die from the fall, it's gonna be the heat from the engines that roast her before she makes it down there.
Yeah, unlike Slade, she does not have a healing factor, but she does have a fucking rocket, which she uses to take out the last plane, and she officially saves Air Force One.
Which is a hell of a turnaround. I did not expect her to walk away from that, so just, like, curiously, I guess. Like, it was very clever.
I don't know why the entire film, every time she was involved with a fight scene, I'm like, okay, here's where she bites the dust.
She just seemed like that character that was going to die in the movie.
Yeah.
Like you expected, like, specifically important characters to the family to die in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, that would just progress Slade into becoming more evil and everything like that, right? You know, they kill the mother off, the kids still believe in her spirit to do what's right, be faithful and everything like that. And Slade, going through all this violence, this nonsensical course of action, he finds out that, you know, it's clearly not helping. I do my best, I abide by these guidelines, and they've gotten me nowhere except maybe to see my family for the last time, and that's just ridiculous. And it's a great way to separate him into the just veil of darkness while his children go off to become titans or heroes in their own right.
This is also where Slade and Addie now, who does not die.
Not at all.
They manage to infiltrate into the Hive ship where it looks like they've been expected.
Well, absolutely. The ladder came up in everything after kicking everybody's ass, and, well, Slade and Addie are now on board with everyone. They're now there with Rose. They're now there with Jericho, as he's called, Shiva, Jackal. And Jackal's going on about sins and all of that and manages to have Rose convinced that everything that's happened to Jericho, everything is her fault, from, you know, decision-making into meeting her, following her and everything like that, teaming up with the Jackal. All the way up to the point where they're about ready to die. They're about to see their parents, at the very least, attempted to be killed. And it's not something, regardless of the situation, that any child should have to see.
And it's not one that they see, as during the giant battle, Rose kills Shiva.
Oh, yeah. They start going at all out on each other fairly well. And Shiva gets old reliable right in the throat. She got jaded.
And speaking of, this is when we now learn that the reason Jekyll has been targeting Slade for all these years is Slade watched Jekyll, or sorry, Slade caused Jekyll to watch the death of his own daughter Jade.
Now, I don't want to go pointing fingers at people that could be a worse parent than Batman, but Jesus Christ, that Jekyll guy is not smart. You're going into a business, into a method of a criminal empire that would lead to anybody's demise at any given point in time. Regardless of how well you think you can have her protected or guarded, you should never bring your own family into that kind of thing. It's bound to happen to them, and if it doesn't show you the folly of your way, you'll only continue down the path of villainy, only to increase the problems for yourself. So I feel that Jekyll created this problem by including his daughter Jade in on this. Like, if he didn't want to raise her like a regular daughter, then whatever the case is, she would have had a much better upbringing than being slaughtered by somebody else's kid, you know? It's just dumb. Sorry, slaughtered by somebody else's kid. Slaughtered by somebody else, like, just in general, you know? Sorry, I was thinking of her as Jackal's kid since she is, and I got a little messed up there. But, yeah, no, it's sad that Jade's gone, and I feel for Jekyll for losing somebody, but, motherfucker, you're stupid. Stupid.
And it's that stupidity that causes both Jekyll and Slade to begin their fight, and they start falling from the sky as they're still throwing heavy shots. Like, Jekyll is shattering Slade's mask with these punches.
Yeah, as if their fight inside the ship wasn't bad enough, and adding insult to injury to kill Slade's family with the energy blast he keeps in the gloves of his suit, managed to swipe that off, causing a big hole to bust open and suck them into the merciless sky, descending at a great speed. And shit, if anything hurts more than falling at a great speed, it may as well be the punches you're receiving when you're about to, you know, bite the dust there. Since, yeah, Jekyll is just busting Slade up something fierce. Like, he's about ready to turn his head into a pancake.
And it's here Slade realizes that, you know, he's got to take a desperate measure here. You know, desperate acts call for desperate measures. And he attaches one of those C4 explosives right to the chest of the Jekyll and lets it go.
Absolutely. He stopped one of the energy punches. That was really cool. He managed to just kind of, you know, maintain his position. He didn't kick away from him or anything like that. Like, he just wanted to stay there and make sure that the bomb would work. I'm guessing there was some percentage of Slade thinking that, you know, hey, my healing factor will kick in and save me, even though I'm almost ancient years old. So that should be fine for me. But, yeah, no, he gets the last laugh on that part, and both of those guys, they go out with a bang, man. Like, that explosion was big.
Yeah, Wintergreen, who had been flying through the sky looking to try catch Slade, sees the explosion. There ain't no coming back from that, they assume.
No, none of that. Everybody flying manages to, you know, get down. They're okay. Jericho's got a force field going up in the one plane. He's, as far as I know, he hasn't tried something quite that specific before, so it was certainly new to him, but he handled it very well. So I really enjoy seeing Joseph Wilson get a better grasp, like just at every moment, a new, better grasp of his power. As well as the other members of the Wilson family are safe. And each of them and Wintergreen, of course, are hoping that they can get to Slade in time before he makes a drop. And I don't think any of them are fast enough for that kind of thing at this point.
Yeah, and it's here that we see that Jericho, Rose, and Addie are all back at the family home. Addie is saying to Rose, you can stay for as long as you want. You are family now.
Absolutely. Regardless of how dysfunctional it may be, as stated in the movie itself, regardless how ties have mended or have been, you know, just initiated between them, it's great to know that they're going to try and overcome it and become something better of it. This is all during them putting their stuff in for a move, and we see that Jericho is just reading through the old Knights and Dragons book that his dad got him. It's a pretty nice little book, you know. They've been going through little parts of it, like just going over the dialogue of it throughout certain parts of the movie, you notice. And at this time, they finally managed to finish it, which is really badass. It's actually a fun little stint of a story. So, of course, you're at the beginning of it, but I'm still going through the whole thing anyway. So the land was filled with dragons, and the people were afraid. But the Shining Knight came riding forth to protect both man and maid. He faced the fiercest creatures that the world had ever known, and he did it all to save us, for the knight was not alone. And when his work was done, the dragons were no more. And so the knight rode on into legend, into lore. And that is the entirety of the book that Slade was reading to his son. That was the book Knights and Dragons, which captures so much relativity into character development that led into just overall the progression of the story, how these relationships turn from being torn and so hateful to a band of togetherness, more or less, you know, that real family draw thing going on. So it was, I find it was a nice way to end the movie, or so we thought at the very least, for we cut back to the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, we do cut back to the beach, and Slade's body does wash upon shore, sand in the cuts and all. Is he dead? Oh, hell no. That eye opens, and credits. That is the end of the film. It does end with an opening eye, so I'm going to throw the question out right away. Rose, left with both eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did. It was certainly something, but also as well, his actual wife, Addie, was still alive as well, and he hadn't gone into a complete state of villainy. When he was training Rose beforehand, he was like still an evil version of Destro of the Terminator, whereas this one is more of the mercenary for hire to take down the bad guys, regardless of who and what's paying. So, you know, you're talking about a mercenary that goes to bad guys, takes their money, kills their targets, and kills them if they're corrupt in any means, and just goes about his day.
So, but Shiva, she couldn't have taken out an eye as a permanent reminder of her father?
Or that one at the beginning where with the glass, where you thought that was where she was going
to
lose
when her Rose goes in for the stab there, just barely making it in time to stop Shiva's stab, which was aimed for for Addie's chest, but because of her height, it got Rose in the eye instead.
Yeah.
That would have made so much more sense, and I agree. And that would have been a great lean into, like, you know, just a reminder of her father, or just as a means to develop that character quicker than anticipated.
But overall feelings and thoughts on it?
I liked it. It was a really good story.
I think it would have been so much cooler if he opened up with, like, one of those sitcom stints, like, hey, this is me. You're probably wondering how I got here.
Wrong Wilson, sir.
And just to, you know, go way right back to the beginning.
That is the wrong mercenary with the last name Wilson.
Oh, come on now. This is How I Met Your Desk Work, right?
Oh, we watched some, or listened to some Bob Saget comedy earlier today.
That's outstanding. Bob Saget's hilarious.
On that note, next week the episode will be released on Batman Day on September 19th. So watch for our review of Batman Year One.
That's going to be dope. I can't wait to review that one. It was a great means to storytelling, good detail of Gotham's origins regarding the Batman's development. So being a past story as it was, it's still a great one to tell, and I can't wait to get into that.
Excellent. So on that, Shawnee, got anything else DC-related on your mind that you want to talk about this week?
Not off the top of my head.
Anything specific you're looking forward to from fandom tomorrow?
No, I just am glad I get to actually watch it so I don't have to do a baby shower.
Do you fear Michael Chiklis?
I do fear Michael Chiklis.
Michael Chiklis is very short, but very dangerous. Fear Michael Chiklis.
On that, Mize, anything specific you're looking forward to from the fandom panel?
Everything. I didn't think I'd be interested in everything going into, like, the part one. But I can't really put anything down for specification on it. There is so much they have, and none of it has been dull to me. So I cannot wait for absolutely everything coming from that event.
I am not as optimistic. There are quite a few panels that just look like 5-10 minute filler bits.
It would seem that way too, and you know, it's sometimes good for that because you either A, need the bathroom break, or B, need something to just kind of look over and just kind of keep your eyes on every time, like you're going to make food or something like that, or just, you know, yell at the cats, but whatever the case is.
Yell at Max to shut up.
Or whatever the case may be. Folks, I've had a great time with this one this week. I hope you have as well. Like, share, subscribe, tell your friends about us. Wear a fucking mask. Wash your hands.
Absolutely. That's important to maintain the state of the health environment. And that doesn't mean wear it with your nose poking out. That doesn't mean wearing it under your chin. That doesn't mean wearing it over your eyes.
That doesn't mean wearing it over your cheek and one eye.
There was a guy at the grocery store today that was only wearing it like this. And
they can't see what... Only wearing it under his chin.
Under his chin and over his head, like around his head. Like it was like, I don't know, I can't, like a hood almost. But it was like covering his mouth, but not his nose. And I don't know, it was the oddest thing. I should have taken a picture to show my eyes.
Probably is the absolute. That is the oddest thing I've ever heard somebody doing with a mask. I mean, like, if you're going into an occupied space, whether it's for shopping, retail kind of stuff, or even just gatherings in general, always maintain the thought and consideration of wearing a mask for the safety of not just yourself, but the others around you. They could be friends, they could be family, it could be me. And even if I fart, you know, you got to wear the mask, and it's not going to get trapped in your mask, but you can still smell it anyway. I like farting. But still... I'll still wear a mask when I fart. That just means I'm being safe and inconsiderate.
And on that note, folks, we look forward to talking to you on Batman Day. We'll talk all things fandom, all things DC. And make sure, until then, have yourselves a great week. And we will see you next week.
Same bat time.
Same pod time.
Oh, whatever.
Come on.
Take two.
No.
No? Yeah. Fine. We'll see you at the same pod time.
The same bat channel.
See? Bat channel. Bat time.
You're both grounded and double green beans for both of you.
I'm going to give them a max. It's okay.